I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad.
What if what we call public opinion was just a manufactured narrative that makes it easier to convince people that if their views are different, then there's something wrong with that, or there's something wrong with them?
There are over 550 million firearms in worldwide circulation. That's one firearm for every 12 people on the planet. The only question is, how do we arm the other 11?
Please shut down the system.
And now for Newsreel, these are your hosts, Maltos and Gatekeeper.
It is a good day. This is Mike reporting to you from the internet for Sunday, September 14th, 2014. You are listening to Newsreel, the WOG Global sit-rep on core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening in and distributing this program, you are too. You can follow along with our news stories and check our facts by going to newsreel.ca. This is the free WOGcast that can be heard on Rant Radio Talk each and every Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. Pacific Time or 1400 hours Pacific Time. Yeah. Obviously, it's just me today. Sean, Gatekeeper, whatever you want to call him, is in, where is he? Australia? No, went to New Zealand for work. He did that last week. It wasn't a show last week because it's kind of like last second type thing, and I was caught on it. Yeah, I was caught off guard by that, so I didn't have enough time to really scrounge around and do everything. So this week, hopefully, I can get this done on time, get it pushed out, before it actually has to go on the air. If not, then this will be just on the website, and obviously you'll find it from there. Because there's nobody else here to talk to, I am not going to go and talk to myself about how my week was. Obviously, it was just, work. So there we go. So without further ado, into the news. First off, we have in UAV news. Thank you to April Chang for this one. Fly 11 days nonstop. Now that's a long haul. This is on the Telegraph. Airbus successfully tests solar power aircraft with potential to fly forever. Again, with the wording, big thing on this show about wording here. Airbus successfully tests solar-powered aircraft with potential to fly forever and offer satellite-like communications. Very interesting. Insert picture there of a really, really fragile, large, it looks like something, a balsa wood, really, aircraft. The Zephyr aircraft being developed by Airbus holds the record for the longest ever flight. Airbus has moved a step closer to introducing a new class of unmanned solar-powered airplanes. Aeroplanes, according to this, with a limited range after one of this new breed of aircraft completed an 11-day non-stop flight. That's pretty nice, actually. The company's Defense and Space Division has just finished the test of its high-altitude pseudo-satellite, or HAPS, Zephyr 7 vehicle for the Ministry of Defense, paving way for a new range of capabilities for the military. These vehicles could in the future provide surveillance and communications capabilities similar to satellites, but at a fraction of the cost of launching rockets into space and from any conventional runway, rather than a dedicated spaceport. Apparently this thing can be launched from any runway and flies at just 12 knots at sea level. I'm assuming that's the speed. Yes, that would be the speed. The Zephyr is an ultralight aircraft weighing in at just 50 kilograms. Holy crap, that is light. It has a wingspan of 75 feet and flies at altitudes of 65,000 feet, almost twice as high as passenger jets, filling the gap between conventional drones, conventional UAVs, and satellites. Although still in development, it carries up to 5 kilograms of payload. If you think about it, that's not really that heavy. That's what, 10 pounds, I don't know what the conversion is on that, 10, 12 pounds. But then again, at the same time, you can get a computer that weighs less than that. A payload and can be equipped with video cameras and infrared sensors, giving its commanders on the ground real-time surveillance capabilities from a platform that remains on station almost indefinitely. So, yeah, it's the same thing as or not the same thing, but the same kind of idea or concept as the Predator or the Reaper UAVs that the U.S. military uses and other militaries around the world use, and other similar aircraft, that, yeah, you can have it up there, and you can actually keep them up there for a while and actually, you know, loiter and check out what's going on from quite a distance. Nobody even know you're there. This thing can fly a lot higher than those, apparently. I guess what I'm getting out of this. And a lot longer, so same capability. Again, you're not going to be able to shoot anything down because this does not look like it has the capability to hold any missiles or guns or anything else. But for surveillance, hey, awesome. It has also been kitted out with communications equipment, meaning it could in the future provide long-range radio and internet connections in areas that lack the required infrastructure, making it a low-cost alternative to satellites. Using HAPS as a relay station in test handsets 4 miles apart have been able to communicate with each other. Paul Brooks, HAPS head of business development and sales, picture below, said the recent test was significant because the more than 250-hour flight was conducted through winter conditions at a secret location in the Southern Hemisphere. Okay, in the Southern Hemisphere, 250 hours with the flight time, secret location in winter conditions. Antarctica, perhaps? That'd be the perfect place to do it. It is easier to do long flights in the summer when there are 15 hours of light and 9 hours of dark, he said. We flew in winter conditions, which was a real test. Zephyr solar arrays on its wings provide 1,000 watts for each kilogram they weigh. These power the vehicle's motors and two propellers, driving it along at 30 knots at altitude. That's pretty good speed. Using about 450 watts, about three times as much as a light bulb, and also charged its lithium sulfur batteries. Wow. So, yeah, I don't know what kind of light bulb they're running there if it's three times, but whatever. 450 watts. So, a really old desktop computer would run at 450 watts or 500 watts, and it takes the same amount, and it can fly at 30 knots. It's pretty nice. And at 65,000 feet. Nice. However, the challenge comes when the sun goes down, he said. Zephyr's batteries store about 350 watt hours for each kilo that they weigh, meaning that flying in the dark is a major test. The latest test was also flown in winter weather, which is more challenging. Yeah, snow, cloud, all the other fun stuff is just increased, obviously. As well as Zephyr being able to pilot itself with only minimal input from its controllers, the designers have had to overcome major challenges developing the system. And it's your picture of the aircraft at cruising altitude there. This is less of an aircraft and more of a satellite, said Mr. Brooks. We are dealing with issues that most aircraft designers do not. The temperature it operated in during the last test got down to minus 80 degrees Celsius. Yeah, that's cold. And batteries don't work so well in the cold. We're also working in a radiation environment at that height. Yeah, because there's not a lot to protect you from solar radiation at all. Especially clouds, because you're way above them. Ultimately, it's hoped that HAPS will be operated in a similar way to satellites, with teams able to control many of them from a centralized base, unlike today's UAVs. Conventional unmanned aerial vehicles can be almost as expensive to operate as normal aircraft, requiring teams of pilots for each one, said Mr. Brooks. With HAPS, it will be cheaper because you can have lots of them operated centrally and send one to an area of operations, and it will stay there for months at a time until you tell it to come back. Very handy. Mr. Brooks said Zephyr was born out of the UK, with Airbus buying the system from FTSE 250, Defence Research Group, Kinetic last year, and a team of 40 Airbus staff are now developing HAPS at the company's bases in Farnborough and Germany. Zephyr already holds the record for flight duration, having clocked up 14 days in the air in 2010, more than 336 hours, and the program has clocked up almost 1,000 in flying time. Mr. Brooks said this put it ahead of the competition by a factor of 10, but Airbus could face competition in the sector from some unexpected rivals. Facebook, perhaps? Oh, and Anthony says that in the next paragraph. In March, social media company Facebook bought Somerset-based solar-powered drone business Ascenta for $20 million, and the company's chief executive has revealed plans to use high-flying aircraft to provide broadband connections from altitude. This is exactly what everybody wants, is a social media company with its own recon UAVs. Perfect! Anyways, they're probably going to buy this company up too. Or at least the vision of Airbus or whatever. A month later, Google bought New Mexico-based Titan, which is also in the solar drone business. The web search giant has already started work on Project Loon, which is a horrible, horrible name for a project. Which is a network of balloons on the edge of space that is designed to provide internet communications or internet connections in rural areas, fill coverage gaps, and restore communications after disasters. Now, the only problem with that is balloons, once they get up to a certain altitude, you know, with the obviously the gases inside the balloon expanding, balloons typically end up, you know, bursting. And, you know, your payload starts plummeting to the ground. So I don't know how they're going to work with that. Kind of a good idea, but kind of a really crappy idea. It's like, for after disasters, awesome. Really good idea. Regular internet communications in a rural area, you're going to have to send a balloon probably, well, every day or every few days or a few hours anyways. I mean, so yeah, very cool. And again, because Sean is not here, there's not going to be a lot of talking back and forth. So we're going to go on to the next story. Well, actually, first, I actually like this idea. It's pretty cool, but at the same time, it's like, I don't know. Satellite would be more durable, in my opinion, than this. I mean, this thing, again, it looks like balsa wood covered with, I don't know, it doesn't even look like it has a covering on it. Obviously, it does. So I'm going to say it looks like those little remote control planes you can buy or build yourself so that you can see all the wing spars and stuff, and they're covered in, like, I don't know, saran wrap or plastic wrap of some sort. That's what this thing looks like. So I think it's kind of cool for, I don't know, the research end of stuff or whatever, but long-term communication, yeah, I know it's kind of going to cost more to send a satellite up, but at the same time, a satellite is up there. It's, you know, microsatellites. They're perfect for that. You don't need to put a huge 85,000 billion dollar chunk of equipment up in orbit. You just need to put something the size of a lunchbox in orbit and it'll do the same job. Anyways, on to the next story. In play nice or no new equipment for you news. This is from BBC Europe. Ukraine crisis. France halts warship delivery to Russia. The insert picture of a, it looks like an amphibious assault craft. Or, I don't know if it's an assault craft, but whatever. It's like it's got the dock in the back for, you know, literal vessels or whatnot. The Vladivostok was due to be delivered to Russia by late October. France has said conditions are not right for delivery of the first of two Mistral Navy assault ships to Russia. That is an assault ship. There you go. President President Hollande's office blamed Moscow's recent actions in Ukraine. France had until now resisted pressure to halt the delivery, saying it had to respect an existing contract, which is kind of stupid in my opinion. It's somebody that you could possibly be at war with at any time. Oh, we have a contract, we have to fulfill it. Yeah, but at the same time, you know, like, conflict of interest. Russia's Deputy Defense Minister Yuri Borisov said the French decision would not hold back Moscow's plans to reform its armed forces. Quote, although of course it is unpleasant and adds to certain tensions in relations with our French partners, the canceling of this contract will not be a tragedy for our modernization, he said. Quoted by Itar Tass News Agency. Of course, it's not going to screw up their modernization because it's only two vessels. Chances are to get more from anyone else, really. Chances are even from the Americans, oddly enough. That's how that works, economy and politics and all that fun stuff. Ukraine Foreign Minister Pavlo Klimkin tweeted his thanks to the French leadership for his responsible decision, which he said was important for restoring peace in Europe. The Vladivostok, the first of the two helicopter carriers, well, it's a helicopter carrier, was expected to have been delivered to Russia by late October. The second, the Sevastopol, has that was to have been sent next year, although no mention of it was made in Mr. Holland's statement. Analysis, Jonathan Marcus, BBC Defense and Diplomatic Correspondent. I don't know why that's in the heading, but whatever. As the crisis has escalated in eastern Ukraine and as Russia's direct military role there has become more blatant, so the pressure on the French government to halt its sales of two advanced assault ships to Russia has grown stronger. The US and a number of other countries have long made their feelings plain. Has long made their feelings known about the situation, but the deal weathered tensions with Moscow over Syria, and the Russian crew of the first vessel, which is already undergoing sea trials, has traveled to France to begin training. So that's a bit of a scary thing. The thing is already undergoing sea trials with a Russian crew. What's to stop them or to prevent them from saying, well, you will not give us the vessel, we will just we'll take the vessel ourselves and go stuff it up your ass, France. At least we get one of our boats. Fuck you, right? So that's how I see it. From what I understand with this here, they got a Russian crew on this Russian vessel made by France, which is not being sent to Russia because all that crap going on in Ukraine, but at the same time, it's like, what the hell's going to stop them? It's probably not armed right now, but at the same time, whatever. You want to steal it? Steal it. Begin training. This was the most significant Western arms sale to Russia, and its postponement, the exact terms of the suspension of the deal, are not clear. Marks a very visible rebuff to Moscow on the eve of NATO's Wales summit, which apparently might not have went too well in the first place either, because the fact that apparently Russia was saying, hey, don't do this, don't do that. And yeah, I didn't put that in this week because, well, whatever. The Mistral assault ships can carry up to 16 heavy helicopters. Wow, so it's essentially a carrier for helicopters. I thought it was just like one or two helicopters on this thing. Okay, so 16 heavy helicopters, land troops, and armored vehicles. Their delivery would have resulted in a marked improvement in Russia's amphibious capabilities. Insert pictures of the sexy vessel there. Russian sailors seen here with their frigate, the Smolny, have come to France to train on the Vladivostok. Oh, so they came on another boat. Okay. And that's a picture of another boat. France come under pressure from Ukrainians. Yes, of course. Insert picture of pissed off Ukrainian and or French people. But Mr. Holland's office said Wednesday's remarks by the Russian and Ukrainian presidents about a possible ceasefire were not enough to allow France to give the go-ahead, which they are currently under a ceasefire, still as far as I'm aware. Either way, we're not give it the possible go-ahead. The president of the Republic has concluded that despite the prospect of ceasefire, which is yet to be confirmed and put in place, the conditions under which France could authorize the delivery of the first helicopter carrier are not in place, it said in the statement. Previously, France had argued that EU sanctions could not apply retroactively to the Mistral contract, and that it would have been too costly to cancel. The deal of the two helicopter carriers is worth 1.2 billion euros, or $1.6 billion, and I'm assuming the other one's probably pounds, so 0.95 billion pounds. I think that's a pound sign. I'm sorry. Separately, Poland has given details of military exercises to be held later this month in Ukraine. A defense ministry statement said the exercises, codenamed Rapid Trident 14, will involve hundreds of soldiers from NATO member states, including the good old US. Peace deal hopes. Earlier on Wednesday, Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko said he had agreed to a ceasefire process with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin. Mr. Putin said he hoped a peace deal could be reached by Friday when representatives of Russia, Ukraine, and the rebels meet in Minsk for talks. It's a picture of Obama possibly giving me the finger. The pro-Russian rebels have said they support Mr. Putin's proposals. Of course they do, because they're pro-Russian, but that they do not trust Mr. Poroshenko to maintain a ceasefire. Of course not. Pro-Russian. Why would they believe the enemy? It is not clear whether any truce is being observed on the ground. Meanwhile, in Estonia, US President Barack Obama sought to reassure the Baltic states that they would be protected by NATO and said that Washington would stand by Ukraine. insert random picture of a guy with a RPG talking to some guys in balaclavas. Awesome. The deal could see Ukrainian forces withdrawing further. Analysis from, I guess this is another analysis from another dude, from Oleg Boldarev, BBC News Moscow, insisting that Russia is in no way a negotiating party into the Ukrainian conflict. Vladimir Putin is nevertheless certain that it is Moscow's proposals that are going to advance both sides of peace. Mr. Putin's plan is short and leaves a lot of room for interpretation. Well, yeah, they usually do from that side. Take, for example, a point on moving Ukrainian troops away from positions from which towns and cities can be shelled. Taken to an extreme, this can mean rewinding the situation on the ground to a point several weeks ago before Ukrainian advances. Just 2 weeks ago, the discussion centered around them. Centered around when, and not if, the rebels would have to move out of Donetsk and Luhansk. But Moscow's plan will allow them to strengthen their control over the two regional centers and other areas. Mr. Putin has often seemed unwilling to negotiate from a position of weakness, and the reversals of the past few days illustrate this perfectly. Now it's Petro Poroshenko who has to choose whether to accept something which clearly protects Kiev's enemies in eastern Ukraine. The announcements come a day before a NATO summit in Wales, which is expected to discuss the alliance's response to Russia's involvement in the Ukraine conflict. More than 2,600 civilians and combatants have been killed, and more than a million people have fled their homes since fighting erupted in eastern Ukraine in April, when pro-Russian separatists there declared independence. I said, hey, you want to go... You're going to be in this country, and you want to be independent? Screw you. It's its own sovereign country. You can go all the way to Russia. If you're pro-Russian, you go to Russia. Got lots of land there. You know, shouldn't be much of an issue. Go to Siberia. Perfect. Lots of space out there. Nearest neighbor would be about 85 miles away. Where did I leave off of this here? Declared independence. Russia has denied accusations by the West and the Ukrainian government that it is sending troops and military equipment over the border to support the separatists who recently gained the upper hand against government forces. Of course, they're going to deny it, but at the same time, denial is the same thing as admittance, almost, a lot of times nowadays, with governments and whatnot. So, oh, we deny it. Well, yeah, you're doing it. Everybody knows that they're doing it. Same way with the U.S. doing this. This other people, which I can't think of right now, but, you know, whatever. Insert map of Ukraine, Russia, hostile areas, blah, 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 rebel-controlled areas, etc., etc. Which is actually a good chunk of land. And the airport, too, apparently. Or they had the airport before. They got one of them now, though. Oh, there's two airports there. Yeah. Wow, yeah, I'm rambling quite a bit here. Are you in Ukraine? No, I'm not. So, okay, that's the end of that story there. So, I don't know. I think it's a good thing that France has finally, you know, actually stepped up and said, hey, all this crap here, you're not going to get that new vessel that we're building for you. No, deal's off the table. We'll just, you know, use it for ourselves or give it to somebody else or whatever. That's awesome. But the thing is, they shouldn't have sat on their asses for this situation. They should have just said, nope, this crap's going on. We're going to suspend stuff right now. We're not going to talk to you about it or anything like that. So, screw that. You know, or they should have taken steps before now. And I mean, this is an old story. I mean, this is from the story the show we're going to do last week, which is this show this week. But so, September 3rd. But at the same time, it's like September, April. How long does it take to build a warship? Even a small one like this. It's going to take, I don't know, months? Years? So there's probably going before this crap happened in Ukraine, obviously. As soon as something happened, the government should have said, okay, they're more or less on the opposite side now. We cannot give them military equipment. Screw the financial implications about it. Screw the economic implications about it. It does not matter. What is the right thing to do? It's like, don't give your enemy, or the enemy of your allies, or possible enemies, or whatever, military equipment. Do not give them the means to, you know what I mean? Wow, really rambling here today. On to the next story. This was sent in from Weandi in InfoSec News. Hackers use same tools as police to hack into iCloud accounts. Yes, iCloud, that magical Apple cloud setup that they have. We still don't know exactly how the hacking into the iCloud accounts of celebrities happened. One of the reasons for that is that the accounts may have been hacked in different ways, making it hard to pinpoint a single method, which would make sense because why do it all one way where you can stagger everything and screw everybody else up? Some of the actresses may have had their iCloud passwords brute forced directly, so this is the thing with... If nobody's been following the news, what's her face? Jennifer... The Hunger Games chick. And the X-Men chick or whatever. Her and I don't know how many other people all got their stuff hacked and all their nudie photos were leaked. Yay! So that's what this is talking about. Some of the actresses may have had their iCloud passwords brute forced directly, which is what Apple claims, which is a load of shit, Apple. Don't be stupid. And others may have had their Dropbox password stolen. Okay. And then the hackers use those to either get the photos from Dropbox or log into the iCloud accounts. Others may have had weak security questions that were easily guessed and then used to get access to the accounts and so on. What's your password? Password is password or enter or I don't know, my name's Jennifer Lawrence. It's going to be Jennifer Lawrence 1 or something stupid like that. One scary method that seems to still be working, according to some hackers, insert link there, is using forensics tools like the ones that the police use all the time to hack in the phones with or without a warrant. Although a recent court ruling said that the police need a warrant to do it. Yes, it says that they need to have it, but will they all, you know, agree with that or not? Or will they all oblige or follow that recommendation or whatever, or order, I guess. This brings us to something authorities have supported for years, the idea that if you can only give back doors or vulnerabilities to the good guys, quote unquote, then everything will be fine. But time and time again, we learn that these very same vulnerabilities or back doors can and will be used by the quote unquote bad guys, too. If there's an open door in a house, that's meant for the good guys. There's nothing stopping the bad guys from finding it. And entering the house, too. It's the same with software. One piece of software that's being sold by a Russian company to government agencies all over the world as a forensics tool is called the Elcomsoft Phone Password Breaker, EPPB. Forensics tools are typically used when the device is already in the possession of the people doing the data extraction. But this software, EPPB, this Elcomsoft software seems to be able to extract all the data from an iOS device remotely by impersonating the device itself, as long as an interested party already has the user's iCloud credentials, i.e. passwords, I would assume, or name at least. EPPB is not the only forensics tools out there that can obtain data from iOS devices. One from Oxygen, for example, promised to take advantage of the recently discovered iOS backdoors, link on that one, just weeks after the flaws were revealed. The tool could obtain data such as SMS, which is text messaging, pictures, and videos, but also instant messages from other third-party apps. If Apple is serious about the security of its users, it will need to close any loopholes in its software and operating systems. In order to do this, Apple will need to pay much closer attention to companies offering such forensics tools and try to make these tools obsolete as soon as possible. Noting the features, quote-unquote, they offer for cracking iOS devices. This way, Apple can make sure another major hack of iCloud accounts or iOS devices is much less likely to happen in the future. But the same strategy can also stop many other, perhaps less popular, attacks against regular, that is, non-celebrity individuals. Devices or services can never be 100% secure, and it's true that often the user bears some fault for using weak security. Quite often, I would say. Most often, really. That's why a lot of websites say, no, your password's not good enough, you need to re-enter, that's something a little bit beefier. weak security, but Apple can also be more proactive about protecting its users. Indeed. Now, that's the thing with Apple and all the other companies, really. I mean, Android, Google, whatever. Probably BlackBerry, even. They all have these things. And you just can't trust them. Keep your stuff locked down. And the thing is, Apple is in the business of what? Oh, yeah, making money. That's why one of their MacBooks, MacBook Pro, whatever the hell they're called these days, is, you know, two or three times the cost of a similarly spec'd Windows PC. High-end one, but similarly spec'd. They're in for making money. The looks, the money, that's it. Okay, so, you know, they know about it, obviously. So they should get on. Anyways, on to the next story, because I'm going to just keep rambling on if I don't. And in more InfoSec news, this is sent in from Woggle War. Fake cell towers allow the NSA and police to keep track of you. No way. The internet is abuzz with reports of mysterious devices sprinkled across America. I'm going to say the United States, because America is this entire half of the globe. Many of them on military bases, they connect to your phone by mimicking cell phone towers and sucking up your data. There is little public information about these devices, but they are a new favorite toy of government agencies of all stripes. Everyone from the National Security Agency, the good old boys over at the NSA there, to local police forces are using them. These fake towers, known as interceptors, were discovered, there's a link there for that, in July by users of the CryptoPhone 500. One of the ultra-secure cell phones released after Edward Snowden's leaks about NSA snooping. The phone is essentially a Samsung Galaxy S3, customized with high-level encryption that costs around $3,500 frickin' dollars. That's a lot of money, but I guess it's worth it. While driving around the country, CryptoPhone users plotted on a map every time they connected to a nameless tower. Standard towers run by wireless service providers like Verizon, etc., etc., usually have names assigned to them, which kind of makes sense. It's like the same kind of situation with your Wi-Fi router modem type thing for your internet company. Usually they have a name attached to them, so, right? And received an alert that the device had turned off their phone's encryption, allowing their messages to be read. Yeah, insert map of the United States right there with locations of these fake towers. Map showing the location of rogue cell towers identified by the firewall on crypto phones in August via ESD America, a defense and law enforcement tech provider based in Las Vegas, of all places. While the abilities of these interceptors vary, the full-featured versions available to government agencies are capable of a panoply, not a monopoly, a panoply, of interceptions. For example, the VME Dominator can capture calls and texts, and can even control the intercepted phone. That's kind of scary. It is scary. In an interview with NBC, Snowden revealed that with this kind of tech, the NSA is capable of turning on a powered down phone and essentially using it as a bug. Now, what that reminds me of is, one of the Batman Begins, or the one after that, whatever, where, I can't remember the guy's name. Played by Morgan Freeman there. Crap, man, it's horrible. Anyways, using the cell phones to check stuff out. Obviously, it's not going to look as sexy as it did in the movie, but you never know. It can go the same way, more or less. Within reason, of course. Well, then again, not within reason, because that reason's gone out the door in the last few decades. This NSA-style surveillance is spreading to local cops. A growing number of police departments are using tower-mimicking devices, stingrays, quote-unquote, to track a cell phone's location and extract call logs. Though little is known about the use of these devices, watchdog groups have scored small victories in their attempts to punch through this veil of secrecy. The map below, courtesy of the ACLU, shows how the use of stingrays is spreading. The map also shows that despite the ALCU's greatest efforts, it is unable to uncover information about stingray use in most of the country. That's a nice map there. So you got lots of places like Washington, California, Arizona, Texas, Missouri, Georgia, North Carolina, Virginia, Maryland, what's the other one? And Michigan, that the local law enforcement have cell site simulators. And you got places like Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, New York, and Florida, where state and local police have cell site simulators. And then you got Indianapolis? Or whatever IN is, I'm pretty sure it's Indianapolis. Indiana, PA, Pennsylvania, Indiana, Pennsylvania, state police have cell site simulators. And then, yeah, again, most of the country there's no information on it at all, so yay. So either way, the places where there's the most people in those states, i.e. Eastern Seaboard, West Coast, Texas, around the Great Lakes, where all the people live, they are pretty much guaranteed to have these cell site simulators. So anybody out there, any logs, anybody else out there, watch your traffic. A recent case provided a glimpse into what stingrays can do and how they are being used. In January, Tallahassee, Florida, police used one to track a stolen cell phone to a suspect's apartment. The police then entered the home without permission, conducted a search, and arrested the suspect in his home. Not only did the police not have a warrant, but they did not disclose to a judge that they were in possession of a stingray because the department had received it on loan from the manufacturer on condition of secrecy. Yeah, so that's definitely not good when the cops are withholding information and doing things, well, illegally. You know, I guess it kind of makes sense that they would do that because maybe that's the only way to get the guy, but, you know. Only after a judge granted a motion filed by the ACLU to unseal the transcripts of the case, the federal government had previously demanded the proceedings to be sealed, going so far as to try to invoke the Homeland Security Act as a reason. That's a bit much, unless the guy was actually a terrorist or something. And it was revealed that between 2007 and 2010, the department used stingrays without getting warrants around 200 times. So in 3 years, they use these devices 200 times without getting warrants. That's wow. Additionally, the department had two devices, one mounted on a police vehicle and the other carried by hand, and both were evaluating nearby cell phones in order to find a suspect. This means that information like location and phone data was pulled from innocent bystanders as well as the target of an investigation. This is why you get a warrant for this crap. Because yes, it's nice that you're gonna go after the bad guy. However, at the same time, how many other people are you stealing information from? In the wake of the militarized response by the police in Ferguson, Missouri, to protesters, many are taking a closer look at how the government may be abetting law enforcement in surreptitious cell phone surveillance. The purchase of such equipment is often funded by Homeland Security grants for which state and local police departments can apply. The gradual uncovering of this paper trail reveals new details about surveillance tech use. For instance, a Tacoma, Washington purchase order uncovered by the News Tribune revealed that a major reason there's been a recent surge in requests for upgraded stingrays is the spread of 4G service. Which, yeah, it makes sense. I mean, if you have older tech, and it can only read, 2G, 3G, yeah, 4G is a little bit different. I'm not 100% sure how differently, but it's still different. So, yeah, you're going to want to upgrade it. Whatever. I guess it says it right there. Older stingrays, like kind used by police departments, force phones using 4G or 3G down to 2G. In order to more easily decrypt data in real time, but 2G service is expected to be shut off soon. AT&T announced it would do so in 2017. If a Stingray can't knock a 4G phone down to 2G, however, it can't do its job. Smithsonian. That's why they couldn't upgrade them, so they don't have to worry about that crap. But, you know, at the same time, really, do they need to be doing this? Probably not. Ooh, let's see here. Last week, the city of Oakland, California released documents revealing that three local jurisdictions applied for a Homeland Security grant to obtain a state-of-the-art cell phone tracking system with 4G tracking capabilities. Other areas included Tacoma, Baltimore, Chesterfield, is that a couch? Virginia, Sunrise, Florida, and Michigan's Oakland County are also seeking upgrades. And that's the thing, if you want it, I can understand them seeking upgrades. I can understand them having the equipment and the tech for that. That's fine, as long as they are using it properly and legally. You need to catch somebody? Awesome. Get the stuff down, get the freaking warrant going, so that you can actually do that stuff legally and whatnot. Or maybe have these devices so that they are, if they're upgraded, maybe they should be able to track a specific. Well, that's a bit of a pain in the asshole too, I guess, right? Because you don't know what the guy's phone number is. So yeah, you have to grab everyone's information. But you should still have that friggin' warrant in place before. Since the news of the phony cell phone towers broke, Les Goldsmith, the CEO of ESD America, which is marketing the Crypto Phone 500 in the US, told Newsweek that sales have been exceptional, he added. We should get far greater units in the field to report interceptors. Definitely, and I guess that's the end of the story. Insert picture of the big NSA building in Utah there now. I already gave my thoughts on that. So yes, this tech is cool and it is useful, but things still need to be done legally. Get the warrants. And here's another thing about, you know, the warrant situation. You know, oh, it's a pain in the ass to get warrants. So that's probably why. I'd say that's a big reason why a lot of law enforcement agencies kind of say, we don't need it, we'll get it after. So nobody's going to know, really. And even when somebody does know, it's like, how much crap's going to be taken? You know, just send the scapegoat off and, you know, slaughter it, and then boom. Then you're, you know, the team or the division or whatever is fine, and then that one guy is, you know, scapegoat, right? So he takes the blame, he's the fall guy. But maybe they should have something in place for the warrants that actually get them through the system quicker, or maybe have somebody dedicated to that or something. But there's a whole bunch of other flaws that go along with that idea though too. Again, this is why I am not in law. That's why I did not study law in the first place. So yeah, good idea having the tech, but horribly crappy implementation and illegal implementation from the people who are supposed to be upholding the law. Next story. Where am I here? In waste gas news, thanks to Wagga War again for this one. The U.S. opens first commercial plant that converts corn waste. Sorry, let me read that whole again. I'm reading it all segmented here. The U.S. opens first commercial plant that converts corn waste to fuel. The plant can produce over 750 tons of corn stover a day. I don't know. I'm not really familiar with the term stover, so I'm going to assume it means fuel. Or gas. So far, the largest biofuels efforts have involved the age-old process of converting sugars in plants into ethanol. If biofuels are ever to make a significant dent in fossil fuel use, however, they're probably going to have to be made from something that can also be used as food, either by us or our farm animals. That means working with something other than sugar. The leading candidate is cellulose, a robust polymer of sugars that give plants the strength to grow several hundred feet tall. So quite possibly, well, vines and trees and stuff. Breaking down cellulose into sugars, which can then be converted into ethanol, is not easy to do economically, although a lot of research has gone into finding processes that work. A leading candidate for this is to use the enzymes from bacteria and fungi that normally decompose wood. The U.S. Energy Information Agency has announced that the nation's first commercial scale plant based on this approach has just opened in Iowa. I don't know where Iowa is. I know it's somewhere in the States. Down in the middle, I'm assuming. I'm probably way off on that. Project Liberty. Okay. Project Liberty, the result of a joint venture between US-based Poet. this is going to be a description of what POET is, and the Netherlands, and the Netherlands Royal DSM will have the capacity to process over 750 tons of corn stover each day. Oh, here we go. Stover is the inedible parts of the plant, husks, cobs, the stalk, and leaves. So anything that you would not eat, and compost, really. Although intended to work with corn, hence the Iowa location, in the middle of corn, it's possible that the facility could be used for other sources of cellulose, like grasses. The EIA says that Project Liberty is one of three commercial facilities that will launch in the near future. Collectively, they'll provide the capacity to produce over 75 million gallons of ethanol each year. That's quite a bit. That would keep the logs going for a while if we had a, corn gas plant. The EIA, I read that part. That sounds great, but the government had once projected that over a billion gallons would be produced in 2013. So that was just last year when they had said that. So clearly the industry is running a bit behind. That said, testing how the digestion of cellulose scales up to those levels will be critical to understanding if and when the process can be competitive with fossil fuels. And of course, it can be competitive with fossil fuels, but holy crap, it's going to take quite some time. Fossil fuels have been used for, at least a century here now, possibly more. And, everything runs on fossil fuels. Everything else is coming out now. A lot of stuff has been around for decades, possibly even the same amount of time as fossil fuel use, but at the same time, it hasn't been properly developed or even looked at properly until just within the last 10 years, really. Same thing with like electric cars and stuff. Like we had the GM EV1 or whatever the heck it was called there back in the 80s or 90s, and they scrapped it. Now all of a sudden, oh look, everybody's going for the electric stuff now. You got the Prius, you got the new Chevy, what the heck's it called, Bolt, I guess, which is essentially the EV1, reborn. All that fun stuff, that's the thing with the world, is just people are like, oh, it's money, money, money. We want the money the fastest way, and we don't want to spend any more money on stuff that we don't need to do right now. So if it's got to be done a little bit later on in the future, fine, it'll be done later on in the future. That's the thing that sucks about the consumer mentality of our society these days. It just really blows. So this is cool that we got this going on. It's really cool to see how quickly they can ramp stuff up or expand their operations. I mean, it's supposed to have three new plants going on, or two other plants going to be built or something like that here it said. So it's very, very cool. Now, that's something they should probably do here in Saskatchewan, seeing as there's a crap ton of corn and wheat and all this other crap grass. This thing runs like grass too. So, why can't they use it up here? Or maybe get rid of all the freaking oil wells that are up here and all that stuff. And another thing on this too is that the one thing that's really nice about this is this, running on corn and all that crap, but it's corn waste. So, people buy the corn, you eat the corn, all the waste from the stalks and stuff. It's awesome. They're actually reusing it for something other than compost. So, pretty cool. And on to the next story. That's what I personally like this one. In current global clusterfuck news, Russian general, this is an old story as well. Actually, I think they're mostly old stories this week, but this one was from last week, September 3rd. But I just double checked on another place, on another website, and it's still pretty current as of September 12th. So, that's good. This is, I don't know what to say, it's Breitbart, whatever that is. Russian general, bring back preemptive nuclear strike option against NATO. Insert picture of weapons of mass destruction. A senior Russian general has called for a military doctrine to be redefined to include the possibility of preemptive nuclear strikes against foreign powers, and that the enemies of Russia should be specifically defined in the document, reports Russian language news agency Interfax. His concerning statement comes in response to the eastward expansion of NATO and plans by the U.S. to deploy missile systems in Eastern Europe, missile defense systems in Eastern Europe. Interfax quotes retired Army General Yuri Yakubov as saying, quote, "The strategic document for the country should in the first place, clearly identified the potential enemy of Russia, which is not in the military doctrine of 2010. In my review, our main enemy is the United States and the North Atlantic Bloc, i.e. NATO. In particular, in my opinion, you need to carefully consider the forms and methods of the operation of aerospace defense, in close cooperation with strategic nuclear deterrence forces, the strategic missile forces, strategic aviation, and the Navy. Thus, it is unclear to study the conditions under which Russia, I have a drink here because my throat's really burning up here. Okay, that feels better. Wow. Let me read that paragraph again. In particular, in my opinion, you need to carefully consider the forms and methods of the operation of aerospace defense in close cooperation with strategic nuclear deterrence forces, the strategic missile forces, strategic aviation, and the Navy, so pretty much all of the military arms. Thus, it is necessary to study the conditions under which Russia could use the Russian Strategic Nuclear Forces, SNF, preemptively. A couple of years ago, the United States and NATO at all levels stated that the North Atlantic Bloc, the West in general, are not the enemy of Russia. And what do we see now? Deployed against us is a real information war, with Russia deliberately shaped as a foe of the West, with far-reaching goals. Yes, because it's essentially Cold War Part 2. It's not like it really ever ended in the first place. And most importantly, our borders are roughly base, sick to the United States and NATO. These global changes and challenges, in my opinion, should be clearly reflected in a revised military doctrine. Russia's military doctrine, which governs the way its armed forces react to events and crises, was last defined in 2010 and made no specific mention of nations the Russian government considered its enemies. It also reserves the right to use nuclear weapons in response to use against it or its allies of nuclear and other weapons of mass destruction, as well as in response to large-scale aggression using conventional weapons, a threat to the very existence of Russian state. News of General Yakubov. News of General Yakubov's comments comes ahead of the NATO conference starting in Wales tomorrow. The meeting is to be dominated by discussions about the situation in Ukraine, which has worsened despite the recent ceasefire. Former Warsaw Pact countries that are now members of NATO, such as Poland, are calling for a much tougher line against Vladimir Putin. They are concerned that a resurgent Russia may attempt to recreate its old Soviet empire, using Russian expatriates in Eastern European countries. So far, the West has been muted in its response to the situation in Ukraine, preferring to target sanctions on individual supporters of Vladimir Putin. This is because countries like Germany are heavily reliant on Russian energy and are very keen to see the situation defuse. Putin himself did not agree to today's ceasefire, claiming that he was not a party in the conflict. Meanwhile, President Obama is in Estonia, shoring up jittery allies of the U.S., including Latvia and Lithuania. So yeah, this is from like September 3rd. And let's see if there's anything else. This other one here. Canada. Yeah, it's the same stuff. But anyway, there's just something. So yeah, all that fun stuff. So that could be fun. You know, possible preemptive nuclear strike against NATO. So that's U.S., Canada, most of Europe. Fun stuff. So yeah, watch your asses. Anyways, that's all we have for news today. But that's not all we have for Newsreel. We have Daily Hack today, or Daily Hack and Cyberpunk Kicks. I wasn't really sure where to put this one. It's a YouTube video, so I guess you can kind of just go from there. But it's a homemade exoskeleton. This was sent in by Sean Kennedy. We can take a look at that. Really cool. A guy made a exoskeleton. No legs or anything like that, just top half. And he can lift, I can't remember how much he can bench press with it on his pneumatically operated air power. Pretty cool. Cooking with Wogs. We do not have any Cooking with Wogs this week. Nobody really sent a lot of news stories in the last... Well, there's been a few, but I mean, there hasn't been anything else coming in. So it kind of died off here within the last week or two. Which is, what's up with that, Army of the Flying Monkeys? Really? But yeah, no Cooking with Wogs this week. And Rec Media, thanks to Wog War for this one. Minority Report. Yes, Minority Report, the movie with Tom Cruise. Check it out. Also, check out Logorama. Logorama, whatever. It's like a half-hour animated short on, I don't know, Ronald McDonald goes on a killing spree, essentially. And everything's done in logos. So all the cars are logos, like car logos and all the other fun stuff. Check it out. It's pretty cool. I just saw it there 2 days ago, and I was actually kind of like, oh, that's actually not too bad. So kind of, you know, when you're watching it, you can kind of see that, wow, everything really is kind of saturated with logos. Not, I mean, it's done up like that in the movie for a certain reason, but you can definitely see it. Like, if you walk down the street, and then obviously it's not animated, it's just not logos all over the place, but you are still seeing stuff all over. So also on top of that, to add to that one, go check out They Live. I'm sure this has been recommended many times on the original newsreel and other newsreels, but yeah, check it out. That's a good movie. Goes pretty good with Logorama. So anyways, that's all we have for you today, but don't worry, we will be back next week to make sure you get the news that you need to survive. This has been a free Wogcast brought to you by the Wogs Who Care. If you cannot donate to the show, please distribute, but if you can donate, please do so by clicking on the Donate tab on the Rant Media website. Thank you to the Army of the Flying Monkeys and their assistance in gathering data. If you have information that you'd like to send us, you can reach us at newsreel2@gmail.com, or you can send us the info through our website at newsreel.ca. If you like the music in the background, be sure to check out Rant Radio Industrial, because that's where I'm snagging the music from today. We'll be fading out now with the track from Patient Zero called Blow It Away. Remember everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we are at each other's throats. So until next time, that's what Server said. End of line.
I want